Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip, when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
What came next is intended for mature audiences only. Episodes discuss topics that can be triggering, such as emotional, physical, and sexual violence, animal abuse, suicide, and murder. I am not a therapist, nor am I a doctor. If you're in need of support, please visit somethingwaswrong.com/resources for a list of nonprofit organizations that can help. Opinions expressed by my guests on the show are their own and do not necessarily represent the views of myself or Broken Cycle Media. Resources and source material are linked in the episode notes. Thank you so much for listening. Tabitha Ross Brown is a Michigan family woman, certified mental health support specialist, victim advocate, and founder of the organization Parent Real Talk. After providing her services to parents for over a decade, Tabitha came to realize that America severely lacks awareness and available resources for families experiencing violence or abuse by a child age perpetrator. She set out on a mission geared towards awareness, treatment, and prevention of child-to-family, and more specifically, child-to-caregiver violence. Her efforts have included the establishment of the very first American-based Child-to-Parent Violence Awareness Day in several counties in Michigan, and her goal is to establish a nationwide awareness day. The Broken Cycle Media team is extremely grateful for this advocate interview with Tabitha, as well as for all of her time, expertise, and related work.
I am Tabitha Ross Brown. I am a certified parent support partner in the state of Michigan. I am a certified mental health first aid responder for youth and adults. I'm trained in critical incident group debriefing. I am a parent advocate and present on child-to-parent violence and abuse awareness. I am the founding president and CEO of Parent Real Talk, PRT Inc. It's an organization supporting parents, guardians, and caregivers living with abuse by a child. CPBA is child-to-parent violence and abuse. It is where parents, caregivers, guardians, and siblings are experiencing abuse by an adult or minor child, and it's highly prevalent throughout the world. I work at a children's mental health agency in Michigan as a parent support partner. My role is to support parents, whether it's guardians, foster or adoptive parents, anyone that's supporting the child, to help them navigating the system, to support them through the challenges that comes with raising a child with a diagnosis. That involves having weekly meetings and discussing issues that are going on with the child. During my meetings, some parents are raising concerns of violence to the point where police intervention is needed. The parents have a feeling of not being supported or heard when it comes to the concerns that they're raising about their child's behavior. as I do this and meet with families, I respect my professional boundaries, but you get to know these people. You know the children, you know of the grandchildren. They become a part of my life. I'm meeting them every week. A mother contacted me. Her son was already on probation for assaulting her, and the abuse continued. She's afraid to tell the judge and the probation officer because the court is being held virtually, and he's sitting right next to her. Another mother that I supported is one of the ones that worries me. This child called the police in the middle of the night. She didn't give him what he wanted during the day. The day went by just as normal, no issues. The middle of the night, he bruised himself. He did something with ill intent to make it seem like he was harmed, called the police. The police came in the middle of the night and arrested mom. She was arrested and held in jail for 3 days. When she was released, after they did the investigation and found out that he lied, they told her to go collect the child and move on like nothing had happened. How do you live in a home with that kind of trauma, walking around on pins and needles because if I say no, CPS is going to come knocking at my door? She's living with that trauma and no one is acknowledging that. People felt sorry. Oh, I'm sorry that happened. But it was on to the next conversation. I'm sitting in meetings and this lady is weeping. You look up years later, she keeps revisiting it because she's experienced psychological trauma. And then it was more a complex trauma because not only did him lying cause the psychological abuse, but now what about the trauma of her being detained? That's a whole nother human rights issue. That mom, she is the same mom where she reported that he put the medication that she does not take in her juice. She talked to him about it. He said he knew it was going to harm her. She tried to contact authorities. It was nothing that could be done. A couple of months later, she had an episode where she was having strange symptoms that seemed like it was life-threatening symptoms. My first thought was, did he do something to harm her? And they just couldn't pick it up. He's broken into her locked rooms. She's walking around her home with a key around her neck because she's protecting her personal items, not family items, personal, intimate items. And he's broken the lock. He's skilled at knowing how to break into a room. This is the same child where the parent has multiple cameras inside of the home and not outside of the home. She feels very comfortable in the neighborhood that she didn't feel like she needed cameras outside of the home. But there are multiple cameras inside of the home. When I do my research, the different traits or characteristics, persons who would do a certain criminal act, this child fits every category. I worry about that mom all the time. There are hundreds of thousands of families within the U.S. that are living with a child who's violent and abusive. Just to give a picture of how prevalent this is, Texas released a crime report in 2022. The report revealed 42,727 CPVA-related incidents. This is just in 1 year. Those are parent, step-parent, grandparent, caregivers, sibling victims. When I analyzed the numbers, there were a few things that stood out to me. One was that there were more CPVA victims than victims that were wives, common law partners, and ex-wives combined. Those victims were a little over 41,000. And the second thing, when I looked at the data, the CPVA victims that were females, there were 27,094, all in 1 year in Texas. The third issue that I found was very concerning to me was that there was only one foster parent that reported abuse, and I challenged that number. There is no way, with the population that is most at risk, which is the foster and adoptive parents, because the children that are coming into the homes already have adverse experiences, there is no way there was only one foster parent that reported violence or abuse. In October, during Domestic Violence Month, organizations in Texas may want to consider talking about child-to-parent violence and abuse. Child-to-parent violence and abuse is a national crisis. Michigan had over 20 counties reporting more parent abuse than spousal abuse. In Florida, this is how early we have data on this, from 1992 to 2020, there were 321,000 parent victims only. That is a staggering number for one state to have. So it is highly likely that there are several million families living with abuse by a child in the United States. And when we think about it, those are just the ones that report it. That doesn't include anyone that's just living silently with the issue. This issue has been going on for decades across the world. There were five countries in Europe that got together to address this issue because they were seeing concerns then. In 2021, the United Kingdom passed legislation recognizing child-to-parent abuse as a form of domestic abuse. Depending on where you are in the world, it's labeled differently. So you can be in Australia, and I believe they label it as adolescent to parent violence and abuse. In Spain, it would be considered child to parent violence. In the UK, it's child to parent abuse. So it's different acronyms and different wording, but it's all the same. We acknowledge that intimate partners, spousal, and elders are abused. We recognize that children as young as 12 are experiencing dating violence. Now, all of this is recognized on a CDC's website. And somewhere along that spectrum, when we speak of domestic violence, child abuse, teenage dating, intimate partners, and elder abuse, all of those forms of abuse are highly encouraged to get away from the perpetrator. But when we think about parents being abused, what do they do? I might want to get away, but I am legally tied and binded to the abuse that no one wants to acknowledge or accept. We don't think that a middle-aged adult can be vulnerable to an abusive child that started out bullying as a child. Children as early as elementary school age are bullying. And bullying is a form of psychological abuse. It's intimidating, it's threatening, it's harassing. That's why we need all of the victim support, all of the guidance, because how do you support these families when they're encouraged to actually shelter in place? We need to acknowledge that there are parents who are just as vulnerable as elders, who are just as vulnerable as a child being abused. Parents need to be believed instead of blamed. Not all homes are dysfunctional or the child has been exposed to trauma. We need to recognize this is more than just parenting. When we reduce this to poor parenting, we are minimizing the effects of peer influences. We are ignoring the impacts of community violence and social media. We are disregarding the symptoms of some mental disorders. When we're talking about these children, they don't all have diagnoses. Most of them do, but not all. So you have mental health and the juvenile justice volleying back and forth because no one wants to take ownership of this issue. And the thing is, they don't have to. Let everyone come to the table and let's all be a system of care for these children. Because at the end of the day, the child will hit every system, and the parent is the one who's trying to manage the care for all of these systems. And Amy, when you think about it, the family is a system. You have the juvenile system, educational system, the mental health system, all of these systems that involves children. And when it comes to creating campaigns, programs, interventions, most of the time, the systems get together and exclude the family voice out of it. The family voice is the link to all of these different systems. You have mental health operating in silos. You have juvenile justice operating in silos. I just think that we're falling so short. When I speak on children abusing their parents, I'm speaking about the behaviors. I will agree with anyone that says a child needs to be protected, but my agreement with that statement is not at the expense of someone else's safety and the risk of them losing their life. The child being held accountable doesn't necessarily mean detainment, but if that is warranted, that's warranted. I've learned that parents, caregivers, and siblings are not experiencing PTSD. They're living with continuous traumatic stress. The threats are active, the violence is persistent, and the abuse escalates. Parents need for their family members to be safe and protected. They need intensive intervention as early as possible for the child. And parents want their child to be held accountable for their behaviors. I've learned that inadvertently, some professionals in child serving systems are excusing and reinforcing abusive behaviors by children towards their parents and their siblings. For a child to feel empowered enough to psychologically abuse parents by threatening to contact child protective services, police, or school officials just to gain control over the parent, somewhere that child has been empowered to think that they will be fully supported in what they're doing. All we're doing is just hurting these kids into adulthood, abusing intimate partners, elders, spouses. We need to sit down and start strategizing because they will eventually become an adult. And if the parent is coping with it, is managing it, however long that may be, at some point, it's not going to be a parent's responsibility. It's going to be someone else's liability. When you look up 10 years later, 20 years later, that's where we should be researching this issue. How many adult offenders are incarcerated now, and it actually started in childhood? We wonder why adults and some abusers and criminals are evading police, and it's because they're skilled and experts at what they're doing. They've practiced for years in plain sight. They know how much force to apply. They understand the placement of the blow to hide a bruise. And they're starting at home. They've broken in and out of locks inside of their homes, and that's why they're able to break into a building, position themselves where the camera can't pick them up. The truth is, domestic violence occurs across a lifespan. I just would hope people would understand that.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Ever notice your dog slowing down and having health issues and wonder, what can I do to make them better? Well, my friend, add Rough Greens to your dog's food for 90 days and I guarantee you'll see changes that will amaze you. Greetings, naturopathic Dr. Dennis Black, inventor of Rough Greens here, and I invite you to give your pup the Rough Greens 90-Day Challenge. In the first 30 days, you'll see shinier coats and increased energy. By day 60, your dog will have a stronger immune system, less shedding, improved joint function, all due to the live nutrients that you've added to their diet. And at 90 days, better digestion, reduced inflammation, improved heart health, and you may even have reduced their cancer risk. Fetch your dog a free Jumpstart trial bag today. Go to tryroughgreens.com. Use promo code TRYRUFF. That's TRYRUFF. Go to tryroughgreens.com. Use promo code TRYRUFF. You just cover the shipping. You don't have to change your dog's food to improve your dog's health. Just add a scoop of Rough Greens.
In 2008, the Office of Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention addressed children abusing parents, siblings, and other family members. And I'm going to quote the report. It said, "Definitions of domestic violence that focus solely on intimate partners to the exclusion of parents, siblings, and other family members overlook most of the assaults that juvenile offenders perpetrated against persons linked to them by close relationships," unquote. That was 20 years ago. And as we continue to just drag our feet on addressing this problem, families are perishing. The professionals and systems are grappling with the intent of the child. But when an adult perpetrator does it, when they're in court or being charged for it, we don't ask about intent. If we handle this issue the same as we handle intimate partner violence, at least just start handling this issue. Right now, we're not even addressing it really at all. Other countries are doing amazing research on it. In Australia, they have a whole report on law enforcement's response to this issue. The United Kingdom has a system of care where they have multiple organizations raising awareness to this issue. If the United States would just recognize the problem and just ask parents, what do you need? And then let's go from there. This is such a complex issue that people really can't wrap their heads around even where to start. We want to recognize that they're children, and we have to nurture them through the process of becoming an adult. But when parents come to professionals and say at the age as early as 3 and 4 that my child is experiencing these behaviors, let's at least acknowledge that and not dismiss them. When I realized the United Kingdom passed legislation in 2021 recognizing child apparent abuse as a form of domestic abuse, I made it my mission to raise awareness and advocate for the same here in the U.S. So I contacted a county commissioner in the county where I worked. I provided statistics on CPVA here in Michigan. I shared stories of residents in the county without identifying the information, of course. I gave a copy of Florida's legislation. Florida did lightly acknowledge this and pass legislation in 2017. So I also shared that with her as well. It was sent to their legal department to verify. And from there, she contacted me the date that the full commission was going to be in session. I had 1 minute to speak and share the story of one of the county residents. The resolution was put to the floor and it was passed by the full commission. After receiving that resolution, I then contacted another county and provided the same information. And both counties recognized child-to-parent violence and abuse as a public concern. October 14th as CPVA Awareness Day, which coincides with the United Kingdom because they recognize it on October 14th as well. And last year was my organization's first CPVA Awareness Day event. That was amazing. I had the FBI on the panel, a forensic psychologist, a CPVA expert, Detroit police. During the roundtable discussion, the commander from the police department said by year to date, there were 1,200 incidents of CPVA. And that was in October. So when you calculate that over the year, I would say it's roughly, 100 calls a month that Detroit is receiving on children abusing their parents. So I am working actively on trying to get the state to recognize CPVA. My future goal is that CPVA law is passed nationally. I would love to have a Wenix law, but okay, we're not going to push it, Amy. But my goal is to have a National Awareness Day just for CPVA alone, and to recommend protective factors, how to respond, interventions. My goal is hopefully the CDC will acknowledge it that way. I would like to see public health departments create initiatives forming some type of awareness campaign. I believe that all child-serving systems should be trained on this issue yearly. There should be yearly training on how to recognize, how to respond to this issue appropriately, because you can't respond to this the same as typical childhood behaviors. This is completely different. There is a difference between violence and aggression. This has to be a mandated reporting issue. I have children putting medication in parents' drinks. I should be able to report that. I have elders who are telling me they feel like they're in abusive relationships. I have elders telling me that they've gone to police to report it, but they're being told that it's a parenting issue. When parents first see signs, that's where we need to be monitoring and supporting these families. Parents need to be believed and not blamed. There should be mandated reporting on this issue. There should be integrated systems of care with diversion, intervention, and prevention programs to monitor and support these families. Separate from individual and family therapy, these children should be mandated to take domestic violence classes that's tailored to their age group, of course, not anger management or talking about their feelings. They should be taking domestic violence classes. The CDC should give guidance on this issue, address this problem as they have other forms of abuse. And it would be great if victim rights organizations could offer support on this issue. A victim who have legal responsibility for the perpetrator and the abuse is continuing. What rights do that victim have? Don't judge the parent for being fearful or blame them for the child's behaviors, because a lot of parents that are going through feel isolated from their family because of the judgment. Some of these children, you can give them everything that they want, and it's never enough. You can give them the harshest punishment possible. I agree that family dynamics factors into a child's behavior, but so does other influences. And this problem is greater than just parenting. Without the proper help from the violence and abuse, it'll just continue. The children would just have these intermittent explosive eruptions. Just acknowledge what parents are going through without judgment. Don't offer what you think they should do unless they ask. Most of these parents have done everything possible. They just need that trusted person that they can confide in. I would advise them to just ask, what do you need from me? How can I support you? And then possibly shining a light on the issue and raising awareness would help. Parents are living in precarious situations. Besides removing anything that can be considered as a weapon, and of course, calling 911, I would highly suggest that parents consider learning breakaway techniques. Breakaway techniques are strategies that don't require restraining the child, nor does it require engaging with the child. Because a lot of times, especially when these children are escalated, the less said is the better. So I would definitely suggest them learning breakaway techniques. Those are the techniques of learning how and where to stand, how to position yourself, how to escape a bite or a chokehold or your hair being grabbed. It is so important that they not only protect themselves physically and mentally, but their liberty, because precedent has been set. Parents can now be charged for the crime of their child. I would document everything, every police call, police report, every mental health visit where a new incident has happened. I would report it and report it in writing, not verbally. Take pictures, of course. Share that as evidence when they're doing their reporting. Consider putting up cameras in the home, and that won't prevent the abuse, but it can give some support should something happen in the future and they would need that as evidence. It would also help to use the terminology when they're speaking to professionals. Saying, "I'm afraid something is going to happen," is a lot different than saying the abuse has escalated, putting myself and others in the home at an increased risk of being harmed. The previous is your feelings in a complaint, and the latter is a fact. There's a danger assessment that professionals use to determine if the victim's risk of danger is increasing. I would go over that assessment, and every time an event happened, share it with professionals. Email it to police, educators, mental health if your child is receiving services. I would document everything, because if your child does something to you or the sibling inside of the home or outside of the home, you've done your due diligence in getting your child help and getting things reported. Foster and adoptive parents, they have rights. Make sure they have a copy of their rights. Contacting the state legislator, the attorney general, even the victim assistance agencies for support and guidance might be a good tool and resource to have. When you contact the media, then everyone is working on the issue. If you feel comfortable contacting the media, you can Google a lot of media and news-related articles on YouTube, especially from the UK. They've definitely touched on this in the media in the UK. Finding a support group or someone that is trusted, that understands what you're going through. There are a few organizations, very few, here in the U.S. that I know of. When I Google parent abuse or child apparent violence and abuse, it populates or generates child abuse. But there is an organization in the UK. It's called PEGS, P-E-G-S, Parental Education Growth Support. When I first started my journey, I reached out to the organization and the director contacted me. I have been connected ever since, and we're constantly connecting with each other, sharing supports and resources. The UK is actually supporting United States citizens who are going through this issue because they can't find the help here in the United States. One resource that I think would be awesome for parents is the Trauma Resource Institute. They have an amazing training on resilience and managing stress. It's called the Community Resilience Model. And they also have an app, and I believe it's called iChill, and they walk you through wellness skills and being able to recognize when you're bumped out of your resilient zone. It's an amazing app that I think these parents need to have. And of course, my organization, Parent Road Talk. My organization is still fairly new. I started in December of 2022. I am working on my nonprofit status. I deal directly with parents. I don't support children directly. If I'm supporting a parent, I'm supporting a child. But there are so many organizations out there that do support the children. I strictly give all of my support to the parent. I am heavily focusing on raising awareness, getting it out there, parents to understand that they're not alone. I definitely want to get my workshop up and running and be consistent with parents to support them in understanding their wellness and how important that is. Since it's just me and I still work full-time at the agency, a lot of my work is really done in the evenings and on the weekends. I am constantly researching and I do awareness presentations. Hopefully, Amy, you and I will be working on some things together coming up pretty soon. Hopefully, at some point, I can get funding. There's a lot of things that I would like to do, but my main goal right now is to raise awareness and bring as much attention to this as I possibly can.
As an advocate in the mental health space and giving so much of yourself between your full-time gig, the organization, your studying efforts, everything, how do you support yourself? What's gotten you through the hardest portions of all of this work?
I'm still learning. It can be very stressful sometimes. I've noticed that it does affect me and my health sometimes. I have an amazing support system, mentors, friends, family, and I'm always going to them with just releasing stories because it's good for me to get it out. Sometimes I have to separate myself from it because I hear it during the day when I'm at the agency. And then in the evening, I'm constantly researching the same thing. So sometimes I have to remove myself from it and just set it aside. My problem come in is that when I step away from it, I'm always constantly thinking about it. And then sometimes it becomes a relief for me to go in and do my research because I'm learning. So it's a constant cycle for me that I'm still learning. The iChill app, the Trauma Institute, I am more in tune now with what I'm experiencing. And I can feel when I start to get tense. And then I can calm myself down. I'm starting to get warm because I'm getting more and more aggravated. I can notice different things and I'm able to work myself through it. And that app has really worked for me. So I highly advise parents to just try it. But really talking and getting it out is what has been most beneficial for me.
I just appreciate everything you do. You have brought me to tears so many times in this conversation. The things that you've said, if my mom had heard at any point in her journey from someone like you, it would have probably changed her life. You're phenomenal. I just so appreciate you.
Amy, I thank you so much for giving me the opportunity. I binge listened to your episodes on the podcast, Something Was Wrong, season 7, all 6 of those episodes, and then the 2 on What Came Next. I was so happy for you that you've come to a place where you were able to share your story. And I thought to myself, it would be amazing if you were to be the keynote speaker at my annual CPVA event in October of this year. So I reached out to you and you graciously accepted. I was scared to reach out, but I thank you so much for what all that you have gone through just to be able to be at that place. I didn't go through it. I think about all the time what I'm doing, and I try to stay as humble as I can and not sensationalize it. I want to be sensitive to the families as I go through the process of raising awareness. I just hope that what I'm doing helps. I hope that it would change something along the way.
According to the website for the organization Parental Education Growth Support, those reporting CPVA-related violence recognize the violent behavior started before the age of 6 in nearly 25% of perpetrators. Verbal and physical abuse are the most common types of child-to-parent abuse, experienced by 97% and 90% of parents reporting, respectively. Of documented cases in the UK, almost 1 in 5 victims are physically attacked every day by their child, and another third are physically attacked at least once a week. Most children displaying abusive behaviors towards a parental figure will also do so towards other children living in the home. Almost all of the guardians surveyed by Parental Education Growth Support had to change their routines because of the abuse they've experienced, and almost 3/4 have lost touch with a friend or family member as a consequence. Professionally, 70% report having to reduce their hours or leave work altogether. And in terms of longevity, in nearly 10% of known CPVA cases, the abuse continues after the child turns 18 and well into adulthood. Although we are grateful for the aforementioned statistics supplied by Parent Education Growth Support, all-encompassing statistics are hard to pinpoint. Still, child-to-guardian violence is an extremely prevalent issue that is often overlooked when discussing domestic violence. To help support Tabitha's advocacy efforts, please visit her website at parentrealtalk.com and join her informational mailing list. If you or someone you know is a victim of child-to-parent violence or abuse, and you're in immediate danger, please call 911 and speak to your local law enforcement. Otherwise, please visit the episode notes for a list of related resources. This episode is dedicated to my mom, Hadass Winnick, and all other victims who have lost their lives to child-to-parent violence. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. Next week on What Came Next.
I looked at my phone. I had a message from my dad's boss, and he's like, "You haven't talked to the Michigan State Police yet?" And I said, "Well, no, I haven't talked to anybody yet." And he's like, "Oh my God, man, I'm so sorry to tell you this, but she murdered your dad." From that moment he said it, time stood still.
What Came Next is a Broken Cycle Media production co-produced by Amy B. Chesler and Tiffany Reese. If you'd like to help support What Came Next, you can leave us a positive review, support our sponsors, or follow Broken Cycle Media on Instagram at Broken Cycle Media. Check out the episode notes for sources, resources, and to follow our guests. Thank you again for listening.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at IPVanish.com/audio.